Welcome to the Park City Area Project for Deeper Understanding Tesoro Pipeline Public Forum. This is KPCW Park City, 91.9 on your FM dial. I'm Bob Richer, your moderator. Let's introduce our panel. About a 15-second introduction, gentlemen. Tom Clyde, why don't you go first?
Okay, I'm Tom Clyde. I've practiced law in the community here for a long time. Also a columnist for the Park Record, but my real involvement with the Tesoro Project is that I'm a landowner whose property will be condemned for the pipeline right of way. And I've been on both the giving and the receiving end of eminent domain actions through the years, so I kind of know how it works.
I'm Dave Hederly Smith. I'm a consulting geologist. I'm here because Father Charles roped me in. I am a proponent of pipelines in general. I truly think they're the lesser of two evils. I'm pretty knowledgeable about energy matters. I'm not so knowledgeable about pipelines, quite frankly, but probably more so than most of you.
Hi, I'm Scott Paxman, the Assistant General Manager with Weber Basin Water Conservancy District. My responsibilities are water supply for the five county areas, including Summit, Morgan, Weber Davis, and Box Elder. And a lot of my responsibilities include watershed protection.
Hi, I'm Rob Herman. I work for a natural gas pipeline company. I have a friend of a friend that I think plays tennis with somebody that knew about this forum, and that's how I ended up on it. So I don't have any specific knowledge of Tesoro's project or specifically really petroleum pipelines, but I'm very familiar with pipeline construction and general pipeline operation, mostly for gas lines, but it's similar. That's my background.
My name is Gary Bailey. I'm an oil and gas operator from Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico. I operated oil and gas properties for about 30 years, and I'm still active in the oil and gas business in Texas. And about 6 years ago, I was involved with a company. I was one of the operating officers that put in a pipeline in West Texas, so I'm very familiar with the input, application, and operating of both oil and gas pipelines.
I'm Chris Cherniak. I also have the same friend as Rob. I think it's Ray who invited me. I'm an environmental engineer, registered civil environmental engineer, and consultant. And among other things, I've worked on oil spill cleanups and remediation. Hopefully I'll bring some environmental perspective into some of the issues and challenges associated with this pipeline.
So I don't think it's fair that I had to speak after a radio star with that radio voice, but I'm Bob Jasper, and I'm the Summit County Manager. I started out of college as a rock and roll promoter and community organizer, and then became a bureaucrat. So I've been county manager or in county management in two counties in Colorado, one county in Wyoming, and one county in Nevada, and now I'm here.
Okay, thank you all. Ladies and gentlemen in our audience and those listening at home, it goes without saying, but I'm still gonna say it, we all use Tesoro's product. With perhaps a few exceptions, we all drove here this evening, and that's not going to change anytime soon. So as the ground rules for the Project for Deeper Understanding state, we will not vilify Tesoro or the oil industry. But who are we dealing with here in Summit County? Who is Tesoro? Well, they were founded in 1968. They began operating their first refinery in 1969 in Alaska, and in 2001 acquired their Salt Lake City refinery. They are a Fortune 100 company, an independent refiner and marketer of petroleum products. Tesoro, through its subsidiaries, operates six refineries in the western U.S., with a combined capacity of 850,000 barrels per day. Tesoro's retail marketing system includes over 2,250 retail stations under the Tesoro, Shell, ARCO, Exxon, Mobil, and USA Gasoline brand. Now, as you may have heard on KPCW or read in the Park Record, Tesoro was invited to participate tonight, but for whatever reasons, chose not to. That's unfortunate. As Father Charles said in the Park Record, in the absence of information, we make up our narrative, and it's generally not good. We did receive a statement from their representative, Cindy Gubler, who said in part, We remain committed to engaging with stakeholders and wish you the best with your endeavor. To date, there have been 2 open houses held by the U.S. Forest Service in Heber and Bountiful as part of the NEPA process, and we have held 2 additional open houses in Camas and Duchesne. We have also been working closely with officials, state agencies, water purveyors, and key land owners. So the first question to the panel, why are they not here? What does that say about them? And what responsibility does a corporation have to the communities in which they operate? Tom, let me direct it to you, because you were quoted in the Park Record as saying they were more willing to work with homeowners than you anticipated. Tell us about your experience and your impressions with Tesoro.
I've probably had as much to do with them as anyone here, with the exception maybe of Bob Jasper, who's spent a lot, well, in the Water District. My property is the first private land the pipeline will encounter as it comes over Wolf Creek Pass and off of the National Forest. Forest Service regulations are requiring them to stay parallel to the existing Chevron line, but once they hit the private property, they've got flexibility. The original proposal went through my property, through our ranch, and then into an adjoining cabin area that pretty much would have required demolishing a house. And, you know, the neighborhood obviously was unhappy about that. Tesoro met with us. We had a couple of meetings at my house, you know, sitting around the kitchen table talking about it. And they have, they requested us to propose a different route, which we did, and with minor, shouldn't say minor, but with a couple of changes, they have pretty much agreed to follow the route that we have proposed. It eliminates the problem with the cabin area. It eliminates a couple of crossings of the Provo River. And so on that score, I thought they were quite responsive. And it's odd to me that they are not here, because in the one-on-one meetings, they are eager to be part of the community and eager to cooperate. And on the sort of official public meeting framework, the open houses, and I went to the Heber and the Camas open houses, the level of information that you could pry out of them was not very good. So it's awkward, to say the least, that we're dealing with, on one hand, the public pronouncements, I think, are almost misleading, and on the private side, when they're actually meeting with landowners all along the route, they've been flexible and forthcoming and respectful of neighborhood desires.
Tom, while you have the microphone, let me follow up, because as an attorney, as you mentioned, you know all about eminent domain. Tell us what you expect on your land. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I have been through it a couple of times with UDOT widening the Wolf Creek Pass road through the property. Most recently with Chevron, who needed additional right-of-way for some repair and replacement work on the 60-year-old Chevron line. So what happens is there really is not a discussion of whether you're going to get the pipeline. The only discussion is cost and you know, terms of the occupancy. And what happens is that they will approach a landowner and say, this is the description of what we need. We need a swath of land 50, 80, 100 feet wide. No one really knows yet what they're looking for, that goes from here to here. And that's where the pipeline will be. And then we need additional land and access for construction. And they will offer you a price. And typically that price is not insultingly lowball, but lowball enough that you aren't comfortable accepting it. And so then you hire an appraiser and lawyers and gin up a lot of costs on your side contesting it. And ultimately you either have a lawsuit and a trial over the appraised value or the market value of the land they're taking, or you arrive at a compromise. But during that process, they have the right of immediate occupancy, in which case the court will say, okay, they've got the right to possess the land today, so you can't delay construction, and you can argue about price till the cows come home, but we are building the pipeline, here it goes.
And so that's really what residents and property owners throughout the county will be facing, is one-on-one negotiation. And you guys who built pipelines, it is an incredibly complicated process because you're drawing this new corridor over literally hundreds of pieces of property and hundreds of different owners. And the values that I want protected most on my property may not be the same values that the guy on the next piece wants, and we're trying to agree on where it crosses from my property to the next property. And so it's a horribly, horribly complicated engineering process. But ultimately, for the landowner, there is only one topic of discussion, and that's price, not if, but how much.
Thank you for that information. Let me continue, and we'll just spend a moment more on corporate responsibility. What responsibility does a corporation have to the communities in which they operate? And found a little quote here. The corporate responsibilities include the promotion of a sustainable economy and recognition of the accountability we have to the economies, environments, and communities where we do business around the world. And that was from John F. Smith, Jr., former CEO and president of General Motors. So not a small little company. Chris Cherniak, am I being Pollyannish? The old sawhorse is the only purpose of business is to make a profit for its shareholders. What about the community?
It is a bit Pollyannish in that sense that companies are more and more embracing corporate responsibility, corporate social responsibilities. They have CSR reports, et cetera. I think they aspire as best they can to address the potential environmental issues that their industry may generate or produce. They also recognize that there's a value in developing a environmental policies and corporate social responsibility programs, because they can brand that. They become a brand in that sense. You know, there's a bit of greenwashing associated with that. Obviously, some are dark green and some are minty green, as I like to describe it. But you know, they do what they can. And Tesoro is an example. I think Tom or some others might cite that they're trying to do the right thing here, and that's admirable, at least so far. We'll see how far that goes with respect to the NEPA process and the environmental impact statement that they're responsible for putting together, and which we'll get a chance to review.
Thank you, Chris. Other points of view? If not, we'll kind of move forward. Let's get to the meat of the matter. The Uinta Express Pipeline is a 135-mile-long, 12-inch diameter, heated pipeline to transport approximately 60,000 barrels of waxy crude per day from oil fields in the Uinta Basin to refineries in North Salt Lake. Tesoro hopes the pipeline will be built and operated as early as 2016. It will eliminate 250 truck tanker trips per day on I-80 and US 40. One route or scenario has it running the length of the Camas Valley close to the watershed. The County Council recently passed three ordinances, including two temporary land use regulations regarding the pipeline. Bob Jasper, our county manager, what did the County Council do, and why did they do it? And why did Tesoro then sue the county?
Well, you know, I don't want to speak for Tesoro. I have some theories. But the county has felt really strongly that there needs to be some local say. The county government should have some say in terms of standards and the route, et cetera. And so we adopted, the council adopted some ordinances that the two that are temporary is because by state law they have to eventually go through the Planning Commission. So we do that on a temporary basis, and then we'll go through the Planning Commission in terms of final. It is somewhat about local control. I mean, we feel like there are constituents, there are citizens, and the council wanted to have some say in the process. I would say that, and then the lawsuit was filed, I would guess that they just don't agree, that they think we're preempted by state or federal law. And in some cases, we are preempted by state and federal law. Though we have since met with them, and they have proposed a new route. There's still the NEPA process, and the county is a participating agency in the NEPA process. And what route and what the preferred alternatives and whether it goes or not will first be decided there in that federal process sponsored by the Forest Service. So I guess we adopted the ordinances the council did to make sure that one way or another we would have say on behalf of our citizenry. Whether they're right that we've preempted state and federal authorities, I guess we'll see. It may never come to that because they have proposed some alternative routes that we're happy with. You know, I want to say the county have never taken a position that we're against the pipeline. We had some real concerns about the route, some of the standards used, and we want to work on those issues.
Have you had any...
Does a yellow mean I'm done?
No, you
haven't. Have you had any conversation or interaction, Bob, with either state or federal regulating agencies at this point in time?
Yes, we've met with the Forest Service to make sure we understand the NEPA is National Environmental
Policy Act.
So we've had a meeting with them, and we've signed an interlocal agreement with the federal government, or memorandum of understanding, I guess it is, to be part of that process. It's by the way the federal law has been laid out, they're the lead agency in this NEPA process. There'll be other federal agencies involved.
Okay. David, go ahead.
Yes, Dave Henry Smith. Just a quick comment. I think the county council really deserves a shout out on this. They stepped into the middle of this fray on all of our behalf. We haven't seen the final alignment. I think we're going to have to see the final alignment and take a good hard look at it before this community will sign off on this proposal. I think it's a sensible proposal, but the county council did a great job on our behalf, and you know, more power to them.
Scott
Paxman. one of the main purposes, I think, of the ordinance, it did several things, but one of the main ones, I think, was the protection of the water resources up along the river. The original alignment, as shown on the map, shows for 18 miles that pipeline goes adjacent to the river, adjacent to Rockport Reservoir, and so the ordinance helped try to protect those natural resources and have a separation between any of those waterways. And it helped the water as well as the wetlands and the riparian areas as well. So.
Okay, let's ask some more, I'm gonna ask some more definitional type of questions, and it'll segue kind of into what you were just talking about, Scott. If there was an oil spill, how long does the impact last on the water, the marine environment? Will it endanger water treatment facilities and so forth? I mean, just how bad would it be?
Well, we just went through one down at Willard Bay. Mm-hmm. It took about 2 years to finally get it cleaned up and passed off. They're still monitoring it. And it really depends on the product. If it was a gasoline or a diesel fuel type product, I think it would be much worse than a crude oil product. The crude oil, especially the heated crude oil.
Well, and perhaps you could talk about that. What is crude oil? What is its toxicity as compared to gasoline and some of the others that you just mentioned?
It would be a similar toxicity, but where the crude, especially the waxy crude, comes out, it's a very viscous material, and it has to be heated in order for it to flow. And so if a pipeline were to rupture, that would cause a rupture, that oil or that crude would only flow so far before it became a solid again under normal conditions. If it was very, very hot outside, it could possibly flow a little bit more as well. But anyway, once it enters the water is where we're very concerned, because even the waxy crude would be devastating. It would take months or years to clean up a significant spill near the river or reservoir.
David, you are a Chris, do you want to follow up with that? Go ahead.
Well, actually, yeah, I want to follow up, but there's a couple of examples of crude oil spills, tar sand based spills. I'm going to my notes here. Here they are. The one in 2010 in the Kalamazoo River where a pipeline burst. This is tar sands, Canadian tar sands that was released, tens of thousands of gallons or so, into the Kalamazoo. the problem, they like saying, is that it's many of there's hundreds, if not thousands, of chemicals and derivatives in a barrel of crude oil. That's what makes it so amazing. But some of them are lighter in their or more volatile than others, and it's the volatile ends that can kind of nature can kind of absorb and degrade quicker than the heavier ends. And it's the heavy ends that sink, and that in this case got into the sediment of the Kalamazoo. And once it's in the sediment there, you are left with very few options. Among them, either, again, just letting nature take its course and let dilution and biodegradation act on that oil, or you dredge that oil, or you perhaps seal that bottom with additional sediment. So the challenge is, like you're saying, is that once it's in the soil, it's pretty easy to clean up. A spill, it sets up, you go excavate it, and you're pretty much done. But if it gets into the surface water or the groundwater, then the challenges really happen. That happened in Kalamazoo. One other I wanted to cite was a release of a pipeline, a Tesoro pipeline in North Dakota, actually.
2013.
Yeah, September 25th, right around now. This was an event that occurred that actually went on for days before a farmer whose pipeline was on his property, a farmer was smelling this oil, and then his tractor became bogged down in this oil-saturated soil. And so it went days without being recognized. And again, that's 840,000 gallons were released, and the cleanup there continues. Again, it's mostly excavation with basically soil incineration. But those are some of the kinds of impacts that you face if crude oil likes it, gets released.
You know, it was interesting, what I read about that is that the spill was caused by a leak the size of a quarter. And it's just... David, did you have a comment about the geology or anything on this? I'm sorry. As a geologist, I thought maybe you could.
I'd like to make a comment.
Sure, please do.
It's not that I'm so much in favor of pipelines, but the two pipeline spills you just mentioned, do you know the age of those pipelines?
They're old.
Yeah, they're very old. And I know that's one of our biggest problems in this country. We've got a lot of old pipelines that were not put in. I mean, they were put in properly at the time, and they followed regulations. The pipeline that Tesoro is talking about, the regulations today with all the electronic instruments and all the reading stations and things, they will know if there's a pipeline break. And again, it is a very, very heavy crude, and if it does spill, it's not going to go very far.
I have some specific questions about that, so we'll get into that
okay.
in just a few moments. So
sure.
Appreciate your input on that. But that is the $64,000 question. What are the chances of an oil spill, both from either an event or impact or merely operational? Anybody want to take that, Rob? You build pipelines.
Sure.
And of course, we have a history of some problems in Salt Lake City recently with Red Butte and things of that we
right.
all know about.
And I think what this gentleman said, I'm sorry, I'm not very good with names, is a really good point. Newer pipelines are built that the technology that is used in the mills where the steel is made is better than it was 50, 60 years ago. You have pipes that are going to be a little bit less likely to have what we call a brittle failure, cracking and things like that. It's not impossible to build a pipeline that's only 5 years old and have it have a problem. I mean, there is evidence of those kind of things where maybe it was a manufacturing defect from the plant that wasn't caught. But a lot of things that are done to really reduce the possibility of having a problem is when the pipeline is first installed, after it's put in, before any kind of hydrocarbons are put in the line, they do a hydro test, a pressure test. They fill it with water, and they pressure test it to a significant pressure above what it's designed, what we call MOP, maximum operating pressure, is. For example, and I don't know the Tesoro specifications, if it was going to have 1,000 PSI operating pressure, it would be tested typically to about 1,500 PSI, I'm throwing out an example, 1,200, and I work in the natural gas industry, and in ours, it depends on if you're in a populated area or a less populated area, whether you would have to do a higher pressure test, but that, I don't know if they have that requirement. But there's also X-ray technology that is used. Every piece of pipe is welded together with a weld that's done in the field with welders. Now, a lot of times if they have flat terrain, they'll actually use an automated welding process where there's not a manual welder welding it. There's actually a machine, and there's technicians line it up, and it makes a weld almost like if it was in a factory. But even when they do those, they have another machine that comes behind that does either an ultrasonic or an X-ray test. So these are just some of the things that all pipelines have to do in today's regulation, and basically I think Tesoro, from what I know of them, they are a pretty responsible operator. I actually have a few anecdotal conversations I've had. They recently bought some pipelines that Chevron operates that go up into the Northwest, up through Idaho, and some people I work with have said that since Tesoro operated them, they took data that was from what we call a smart pig that runs through the pipeline, and it's looking for whether there's anomalies in the pipe. They took data that Chevron had already run, and Chevron had looked at it, said we're good, and they went out and dug a whole bunch more places and looked at things that Chevron didn't decide that they needed to go look at. And I'm not trying to throw Chevron under the bus or Tesoro. I'm just saying Tesoro, in what I've been able to observe, seems like they're a pretty responsible operator of pipelines. And
Other comments on that matter? Bob?
Well, I just wanted to point out that we already have a number of pipelines in the county. And over there at Quarry Mountain, just pretty close by, most of those pipelines have sensors and that they're picked up there, and that's where KPCW broadcasts from also, that same, and a county dispatch, and there's a lot going on up there. But one of the things going on is these sensors for existing pipelines.
Okay. David?
Alpha, I would tag on to that. Tom referred to a Chevron right-of-way, pipeline right-of-way through his property. That Chevron line continues on and eventually goes down Parley's Canyon. It comes across Highway 40, through misses Piper. The hospital by, I don't know, 100 yards, cuts across through there. It goes through the Swanner Nature Preserve about a mile north of where we are right now. It goes, I think I was looking at it on, you can see it on Google Maps or Google Earth. I think it goes right down Redstone Center Drive, as a matter of fact, through the Redstone Shopping Plaza. I think it's underneath. I think that's why Redstone's at that kind of peculiar angle. It's right on top of the pipeline, I think. It then continues across to the north end of the outlet stores, across to Haile Uinta, goes through Pine Brook, about six houses uphill from where my home is, and continues on into the Salt Lake Valley. It's two 10-inch pipelines. Right now we're talking about a new 12-inch pipeline, and it's 60 years old. I think I'm on the Pine Brook Homeowners Board, and Chevron seems to be pretty responsible about it. But you know, I think in the real world, we might be more concerned about a 60-year-old pipeline than about one that's going in with 21st century technology, if it goes in properly and is placed properly.